The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to have y'all back, but I'm even more excited to have our guest on today. He's a fellow podcaster and the senior director at the Lukowitz Group, powered by Encore Investment Services, Dan Lukowitz. Dan, thanks for joining us today. How are you, sir?
Hey, it's my pleasure. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we were just talking right before we hit record. I'm super jealous of the sunshine. It's still hot and humid down here, but looking great up there. We very much appreciate your time. I want to jump right in because I know we got a lot of things going on, but for those that are hearing your name for the first time, hearing your voice for the first time, hopefully not, but if they are, want to get a background of where you're from, how you got into real estate, and what kind of real estate you find yourself in these days.
Yeah, so I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I was born in Detroit, Michigan. I'm actually first generation American. Both my parents were born in refugee camps in Europe right after the war. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. My bubby, my grandmother on my mother's side, she should live and be well. She's 96 years old. Just had her on my show for a few episodes. She was flipping houses, believe it or not, in the city of Detroit and around in the surrounding areas in the 50s and 60s, which is absolutely incredible. So I grew up, you know, in an entrepreneurial family. My dad is a pharmacist. He owned his own pharmacies. And in terms of getting my start in real estate, I would argue that my start was like in my genes, you know, from those, from my parents and my ancestors and all that. In terms of me personally, in 2005, I helped to start a company called Disability Made Easy, which is a barrier-free home modification company. We specialized in taking properties and making them handicap accessible for individuals that had terminal illness, disability, injury, et cetera. I did all the sales and marketing, as you know, you and I spoke about. We both have strong sales backgrounds. I always loved sales. And what I'll never forget, Cody, is that when I was going to some of these job sites, we actually hired one of the competitors. They went out of business. So we hired their project manager and we would go together to the job sites initially. And I'll never forget driving to this property. It was an insurance claim 20 years ago. And that's a whole different story about my thoughts on that claim, but the individual needed some serious modifications and upgrades to the home. And we got there and I was, you know, in 2005, I was what, I don't know, 22 years old or something. And I got out of our work truck and the project manager gets out and I looked at him. I said, what are we doing here? This is like an obsolete, like outdated, you know, garbage property. He said, just wait. So we get up to the front of it. He takes out his pad and paper with the graph paper. And in about 45 seconds, he sketches this beautiful new front elevation, right, of this property that was obsolete. You know, it didn't really make sense or didn't work. And within a few minutes, we had a whole plan to create something that actually worked for this individual and had a meaningful impact in their quality of life. And I'll never forget that moment, Cody, where I sat there and I said to myself, if we can take something that has potential and change it into something that's more functional, we can really repurpose things and make them better for the owners. And that image is still to this day emblazoned in my mind. And it wasn't, you know, but a couple of years later that I started buying properties from banks that were functionally obsolete or that had layout issues or size issues or just, you know, lipstick issues, right? And then I would totally renovate them. So, you know, I bought my first home in the heat of the recession, the great financial crisis. And I remember at the time I needed to buy a home for my family. And I looked at properties that were ready to go. And they were, let's say, $175,000, $180,000. And then I noticed that just one street over, there was a bank-owned property. I contacted the lender. I picked it up for $81,000 cash, put in about $60,000. And then, you know, years later, I was able to sell it for, I actually didn't really sell it. I divorced and I sold out my portion. But, you know, during that process, I hired every single trade. And I said to every tradesperson, I said, I'm going to general contract this and I'm going to pay you a little bit more. But I'm going to be annoying. I'm going to stay on the job site. I'm asking questions because I want to learn. And everyone was like cool with it at first. And then they realized how annoying it was. But I learned a lot. I learned so much. And my friends would say to me, Dan, what are you going to do when you finish renovating your house? And I kind of half joke. I said, oh, I'll buy another one. And that's exactly what I did. I bought another one, another one, another one. I went to a tax auction. I bought four properties one day, called my buddy in Florida. We did the deals together. And, you know, 100 houses later, here I am. And during that whole process, I was always doing it on the side, right? It was always my side hustle. And at a certain point, I was in development for large Jewish day schools as a fundraiser, which helped me to hone my abilities to raise money, which today is very valuable. And at that point in time, I left the nonprofit fundraising world And I decided to run a sales department for a title insurance agency because I felt that title was an elusive aspect of real estate investing for brokers, investors, syndicators, developers, everyone. And I wanted to learn. So I did that, learned a lot, kept flipping. And then I was recruited by a small company you may have heard of called Amazon. And I was a business development executive there for a number of years, still flipping and flipping and flipping. And then finally one day, I'll never forget that moment either. I was in the shower. I knew I was going to be leaving the corporation. And I said, how many houses in the city of Detroit do I need to own and cash flow to replace my corporate income? And at that point in time, we had already rebranded our company from Oakland Real Estate Ventures to Renaissance Real Estate Ventures in the city of Detroit, the Renaissance City, right? And at that point, the answer was 20. So I literally went out the next day and I bought 20 properties. And I didn't have the money for them. I raised it from friends and family. And, you know, true to myself in those days, I flew by the seat of my pants and that wound up in some interesting neighborhoods in Detroit, flipping and flipping and flipping. And eventually, I was recruited by a commercial real estate brokerage to be a broker. And that, again, was an interesting turn of events because I went from these highly active investments, right? Single family and multifamily flips where they were so active that I was literally wearing a bulletproof vest and carrying around, you know, looking like I was part of the SWAT team. And I was managing contractors and buying equipment and trucks and properties and, you know, dealing with all these different things. And finally, when I started getting involved in the brokerage world from commercial real estate, I started scratching my head and realized that, you know, we'll talk about a lot of the challenges I had, a lot of the problems I had, but I finally realized that the beauty of being a broker is that, just to be frank, we're never holding the bag. It's quite passive and we're always valuable because we're advisors, right? You know, I say it's on our mugs, but we provide value and everything else follows from there. And that's where I really transitioned into net lease brokerage. And I shifted my whole investing strategy more towards commercial and towards other types of investments.
Yeah. No worries. Well, listen, we love hearing about everyone's background. Some people grow up in it like you did, like it seems like you were born with it, right? I mean, your entire family, grandmother on down, really helped you figure out that entrepreneurial spirit and more importantly, the real estate aspect. So we love hearing the background. We love hearing how you got into it. Everyone's got a unique story. So just, we loved bringing those out from our guests. As you mentioned, we brought you on today to talk a little bit about something different. You've had a lot of success. You've moved away from your corporate job and successfully transitioned to full-time real estate, but I can't imagine that it's always been easy. So that's what we want to talk to you about today. Maybe a challenge or two that you faced that really pushed you to the brink so that our audience can learn from and really understand what does it take to make it in real estate?
So listen, those are really great questions and great points because it's important to recognize that we are all human and this is an interesting game, interesting opportunities. Anybody who tells you that there's no mistakes to be made and there's no money to be lost is not telling the truth, quite frankly. And if they are, I'd love to learn their systems. I've been fortunate to be successful and to learn through a lot of things through the mentors that I had and the programs that I've created and systems I've created. At the same time, there were many mistakes that I made. I can think of one that really stands out. You know, I talked about my experience rebranding my company and moving into the city of Detroit. Well, city of Detroit is an interesting animal. In fact, at the time that I moved my company in, Detroit was kind of like a four-letter word to investors. People were scared of it. It wasn't like a sexy place to invest. The returns were insane, but it was dangerous. And it was, you know, there's a lot of blight and a lot of arson and all that stuff. So biggest lesson I learned in the city of Detroit is that when you make an investment, you want to make sure that you make the investment with eyes and boots on on the property and boots on the ground in the summertime. Okay. Because during the winter, a lot of the residents stay indoors, right? A lot of the gangs, a lot of the drug traffic, a lot of that stuff dies down, or at least it's indoors, right? During the summer, a lot of these properties don't have air conditioning. A lot of people are hanging out on porches. A lot of people are out in the street. And that's when you really get a good flavor of what the neighborhood's like. So during that transition where I bought all those properties, I was in a certain part of Detroit that I like to refer to as the jungle, okay? Also known as the East Side, East Detroit. And I recently actually sold a lot of commercial property over there and I love it, but the actual residential years ago, the jungle has no rules, right? The jungle is a dangerous place and I get it because it's a survival mentality. So I bought about a bunch of properties from banks in the winter and you think you can't go wrong spending $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 on a property, right? Well, you usually can't, right? Especially if you're selling them for 40 or 50, or if you're just, you know, flipping with a light rehab or flipping them for 30 immediately, or if they're a little bit more expensive, maybe buying them for 15 or 20, putting in 60 and selling them for 200 and something. You can't go wrong on that. However, what happens when gangs move in?
What happens when you have squatters? What happens when you're getting broken in every single night and the police don't care? What happens when you have toxic inventory, right? When you're trying to run other businesses and you have these properties that are just sitting there, you're paying on them, paying insurance on them. You got drug dealers dealing drugs in them and squatters there. And, you know, you got all kinds of issues. So I had that happen, and I had that happen with a lot of properties all at once. And I made a decision. Okay. And believe it or not, one of my investors, best friend of mine, talked a lot about this because he was invested in some of this. He said, Dan, cut your losses on some of these, get rid of the toxic inventory because you've got so many other opportunities. You're working on making way more money. And that was really a turning point for me because it was so hard psychologically for me to lose money. I'm a winner. I'm a competitive guy. And I'd rather, you know, finish the property out and make a little money or finish it out and make it beautiful than cut my losses. So I learned very, very quickly through those experiences to, number one, cut my losses and get rid of toxic inventory. Number two, make better investment decisions and do more research and recon, more boots on the ground during all seasons, right? And then also, you know, being in a situation, I'm remembering the property. I had like four or five properties on Lansdowne in Moross Meringue neighborhood, 48224 in Detroit, for anybody who knows that area. Great zip code, but a lot of pockets of very bad neighborhoods. And there was a particular house I bought, three houses that week. One was an all brick home I bought from Chase Bank for 10 grand, like 1700 square feet, beautiful Tudor. The other one was two frame houses. I bought one for like a grand and one for like $3,000 or $4,000. And normally the frame houses are not nearly as desirable because, you know, quite frankly, when a brick house is in a brick part of the block, usually all the houses are brick. Frame house, they're all frame. Well, what happens when a brick house burns? Any idea?
No clue.
Okay, so the inside burns, the bricks are relatively intact. What's more important is the surrounding properties, they don't burn. But when a frame house burns, that thing catches on fire and burns like crazy, and the houses next door melt, okay? No joke. So I was like, oh, brick houses, love them. I always love brick. Frame, nobody wanted frame, so I picked up some cheap ones. Believe it or not, I had more problems with the brick than the frame. I put like 40 grand into it. I ended up selling it for only about 60 or 70 grand, so I didn't even make any money. The hardest part for me was continuing to dump money in when I knew I wasn't going to make money, right? And what was crazy is that that property was owned by Chase Bank for years. They had foreclosed years ago, and they put this thing called VPS, vacant property systems. It's a metal system all over all the doors and windows with like dungeon doors on the outside so nobody can get in. When I bought it, I kept them on there for a little bit and then had to give them back. And as we're renovating the house, it just kept getting broken into and broken into and broken into. And the gangs and drugs were on the other side of the block where my frame houses were. I couldn't understand why this was happening. Come to find out, that was the drug house for the block for decades. And the drug dealers were very, very upset that they lost it to the bank. And then they were very upset that I came in as an investor and was renovating it. So they would constantly destroy the properties around it and they'd constantly break in. So that experience, that whole experience, it was a formative experience for me. I left that neighborhood. I sold that house. I gave away a few of the other ones. And, you know, I have four children. I'm married. And for me, my life and my lifestyle was more important than losing a few dollars on those properties. But listen, that's the honest truth. That's what happened. And that shaped me and molded me. And I would tell anybody out there who's watching this, you're going to make mistakes. Make sure that you have good mentors. Make sure that you're studying with good people, that you're in good courses and all that good stuff. And when you're going to make a mistake, own it. And run with it and learn from it. That's what I did.
Well, and I think that's important to call out because I think a lot of us that are getting into the entrepreneurial game, specifically real estate, but just entrepreneurs in general, we're typically competitive people. We like to win. We're used to winning. And it's hard to see something that isn't doing well and to know that, hey, I got to let this go so I can keep winning somewhere else. Because to us, we've been taught our entire career, whether it's with sports or any other thing that you've done in your life that's competitive at all, it's keep fighting. Even if you're losing, you just keep clawing and keep fighting your way out. But it's so valuable to say no and to know when to say no and reallocate your time, all your resources to other things that can make you more money. I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about the importance of when to say yes and when to say no. And the person speaking quoted, I think it was Warren Buffett that said he made millions saying yes, but he became a billionaire by saying no.
It's so true. It's so true. And, you know, I'm part of a group called the Mankind Project, which I highly recommend, MKP. And one of the things they teach is that when I say no to you or to something, oftentimes I'm saying yes to myself.
Yeah. And the flip side of that I've also heard is if you keep saying yes to things, you're saying no to other things that you don't even recognize or know about.
Absolutely. You're 100% right about that.
Well, Dan, I think that's as good enough a place as ever to kind of wrap up and for us to really kind of shine a light on what you've gone through. And hopefully our audience has really taken a lot of things away. There are a lot of valuable lessons in there. So hopefully people can go back and listen to it again and make sure that they're getting all that information, because there were some really good tidbits along the way. So thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. For those that want to work with you, they want to connect with you, they want to learn more about your experience and how they can maybe emulate that, where's the best place people can find you?
Yeah, so you can find me. I've got a streamcast show. It's called Dan on Top. You can go to my website, danontop.com. You can email me, dan@danontop.com. Check out our websites, thelukowitzgroup.com. We have a course, the CRE Pro course. You can go to creprocourse.com. And if there's anything I can do or my teams can do to add value, I've received so much from people over the years, so much. And these people became my friends and almost like my family members. And if there's anything that I can do to add value to anybody watching this or anyone in the audience, it would be my absolute pleasure. So please reach out. I'm here to help, here to grow. And, you know, together, as you know, Cody, we can do so much more as a group and as a team. So whatever I can do to add value or be of service, please reach out. I'm here to help.
Dan, I can't thank you enough for that and your time and your experience today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll see everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.